98.5thesportshub.com is your connection to the world of Boston sports wherever you go. 98.5thesportshub.com.
Cutcher and Rich.
Self-help shenanigans.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hands to Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown up fakes, steps back behind the line. Off balance three is no good. Smart can't get the rebound. LeBron has got it. He will race into the front court against Marcus Morris. LeBron fights through. Goaltend and the foul. And LeBron James, who has done everything there is to do in the NBA, is going to take a team that no one believed in and bring them back to the NBA Finals.
Yes, he did.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Cutcher and Rich. And Danny Ainge is the Vice President of Basketball Operations. Do I have that Vice President? Well, I have Vice President. I'm really kind of the president of the whole thing. I mean, if you think about it.
You're the guy?
Yeah, I'm the mayor of Saugus.
He's the guy behind the guy. Well, the mayor of Saugus, I think, immediately gets the title of Vice President of Operations for the Boston Celtics.
Well, you can pretty much take any title you want. Regardless, this is a good way to kick things off. Danny Ainge, I think people are aware of your position with the Boston Celtics. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys this morning?
We are good. First of all, congratulations. I don't think I'm out of line by saying congratulations for exceeding expectations this year and getting in as far as you did.
Well, thank you. I do feel like it was a fun group, and I think overall they probably did exceed expectations, but that doesn't take away from the sting of the loss. I felt like you can't say you should or could have won a game, but we definitely had many chances to win that game in Game 7.
Yeah, it seemed winnable, and I heard you talking the day after about that. When you watched that game, what could the Celtics have done differently? Like, what would, if you could do it all over again? Other than make shots, is there anything that you believe they could have done differently?
I mean, there's always second guessing on those things, but overall, like, the defense was terrific. And, I mean, when we saw them playing against Toronto in the playoffs and scoring 120 and 130 points, I mean, like, I think our coaches did a fantastic job of preparing our guys for the defense. And so, yeah, there's a mistake here and there and a blown coverage. But overall, I thought it was our best defensive game of the season. And just offensively, we struggled making baskets.
Why do you think that was? Do you think it had to do with the youth of your team, or did you think it was just one of those days?
You know, it's a good question, and I've wondered about that. Is it like we expended so much energy and so much intensity and emotion into the defensive end, and does that take away from your offensive end? You know, that's always a question, to make players play like a quarterback on offense and play like a linebacker on defense. It's a very delicate balance there. But, I mean, it could have been that. And then, you know, I watched Houston's game the next night, and they shot even worse than we did from the three. And I thought the same thing. Their first half defense was incredible against Golden State. And they couldn't make shots in the second half.
Hey, and, Danny, you're kind of going in and out. Is there a way that you think that you can change that a little bit?
Like, are you near a landline?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
That's yes. A little bit better. Yes, that is definitely better. That is better. Well, one thing about Game 7 that I know that there's been a little bit of talk, and I know Mark Jackson addressed it on the broadcast, and that was the absence of Kyrie Irving, and you addressed that a little bit after the game. Can you kind of clarify what was going on with Kyrie and why wasn't he there in Game 7?
So Kyrie, we had planned on doing this, you know, with the playoff schedule so unpredictable. You know, you don't know where you're going to be from week to week. We had planned Kyrie to get you remember he wore his mask the whole first half of the year. He had this deviated septum that he needed to get fixed and surgically repaired. And while he was, you know, and he couldn't do it while he was, you know, recovering and on the antibiotics from the other surgery. So this was just a time that we had planned to get Kyrie back as quick as he can on the court. And he'll, you know, this is not a big surgery, but a small surgery that he needed to recover from. And so that's why he wasn't at Game 7. But Kyrie was in contact with us, in contact with coaches, in contact with players. We had all of Cleveland scouting reports, and he gave us all the information. I mean, he was in constant contact with us, except there for a couple of days, just while he had the surgery and was recovering.
What day did he get the surgery?
I don't remember. Maybe Thursday of that week. Maybe Wednesday. I'm not sure. I don't remember when exactly it was.
Okay. And the criticism is, and it's one that I actually had, is, you know, for a surgery like that, isn't that something that could be easily moved? I mean, the value of Kyrie Irving being there and possibly seeing something that the Cavaliers were doing, or even just being a calming presence for somebody like Terry Rozier, don't you think that that was valuable enough for him to possibly consider moving his surgery a few days back?
You know, I don't think it's as easy as you went. He was in, he had the surgery done. He wasn't in Boston. So the travel after the surgery, I don't think it's a big deal at all, personally. I think that's a little bit blown out of proportion, but he was with Kyrie or with Terry and communicating with Terry all along and having him sit on the bench to calm Terry's nerves. I don't know. Our coaches, by game seven, you know every single play that they're running, every play they ran the whole year. I'm just not sure how much of a benefit, but anyway, it's a fair criticism, but I think it's probably blown out of proportion.
If you were playing and you were in that situation, would you have been on the bench for Game 7?
You know, it's a tough call because if I'm Kyrie, I mean, Kyrie is dying to not be playing, and he just wants to make sure he gets out. And what he's been through with the surgeries that he's needed, I don't know. I mean, I think that taking care of the person and the team, and sometimes there are conflicts, and I know he just wants to get back out on the court and play. He's dying. He had, like I said, the antibiotics, you know, the drip in the arm for a while, and he couldn't do anything, and now the septum, and, you know, like the running of the nose and all that comes from that sometimes can be a messy, just annoying stuff, but you know, he's trying to do all that he can, and he's been amazing. Him and Gordon both have been unbelievable at trying to get themselves ready for next year.
So where was he location-wise? Just to clarify, Kyrie during Game 7, where was he?
I think he was at home with his daughter and father in New Jersey.
Okay, he was in New Jersey at the time. All right.
Okay, so Danny, and this has kind of been cleared up, but we want to get your take on it. Gordon Hayward had the metal and the screws taken out of his leg, and then there was talk about there was a little bit of a follow-up procedure to get some of the other stuff out of there to clean it up a little bit.
I think people were surprised by the phrase second surgery.
Right.
When it came out yesterday. And
so can you kind of keep us up to date and explain what happened with him?
Yeah, I mean, Gordon felt like he was making great strides, getting close, but there was a pain. He still had a little bit of pain in one little spot, persisted over the last couple months, and they felt like it was being caused by the hardware, and they just took the hardware. They did some testing on it and tested that, like, man, his foot is even stronger than his right foot when that pain is alleviated. So they just felt like they were going to get the hardware out, and his bone had completely healed and the muscles and tissue and everything is all healed, and they just wanted to get that hardware out. So was the safest bet of him being 100% by next year. There wouldn't be lingering effects.
Okay, so one of, I know, the biggest decisions or that the you guys are facing is, you know, what's going to happen with Marcus Smart. And, you know, there's a situation where Marcus Smart could get offered, you know, decent amount of money from another team. And let's just say for some reason it was an amount of money that maybe that you guys wouldn't feel comfortable matching.
But real quick, Rich, Marcus Smart, right after Game 7, was talking about how much money you think he thinks he's worth. Do you think that was an appropriate time to start addressing his contract?
Well, you know, it doesn't matter what I think anyway. I mean, it's a lot of players talk about that, and they're free to say whatever they want in those regards. And and talk about their value publicly. Obviously, I don't negotiate in the media with my players, but, you know, listen, Marcus, we need Marcus. Marcus is a good player. He provides a lot of energy for our team, and you know, I hope that we can work something out going forward.
It doesn't sound like you were overly thrilled with him addressing it right after Game 7.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, I wouldn't, but a lot of players do, so it's his prerogative.
How do you think that kind of takes away from, you know, the idea of the disappointment of what happened? And like you said, you know, how well the team played and how many chances they had to win. Do you think that can give the impression that, you know, he got over that a little too quickly?
No, not at all. I know Marcus was not happy. He was very sad and frustrated with our team with that loss in Game 7. In no way. I mean, it's just simply he's got a million cameras in front of him, a bunch of mics in front. It's not like he's coming out and saying, hey, I need this. Someone was asking that question and persisting on, like, you know, like, well, what do you think you're worth? And he just answered it in his honest opinion. So, you know, I don't think that that was what he was trying to accomplish in his meeting with the press. It was just a question that was asked, and he answered it.
Okay, so let's say he does end up getting, you know, more money from somebody else than you guys would be willing to spend. Do you feel confident that with you and Brad Stevens, you would be able to find somebody and hopefully mold them into something that is close to the kind of playmaker defensively that Marcus Smart is?
Listen, Ed, I think that everybody is replaceable. We learned that as players fairly early in our careers. When there's trades that happen or some injuries happen, and if there was ever a situation, the team that would know that, it would be this team that just went through what we went through this year to lose, you know, two All-Stars anyway in the prime of their careers, you know, early in the season. In one case, like, we're all replaceable, and you know, we'll be able to move on and move forward without any players, and nobody is irreplaceable, but Marcus is certainly a player that has been big for us over the last few years.
Somewhere Scalabrine's crying.
Right. He doesn't like hearing that. But you know, real quick, before we move on to something else, back to Game 7, there's a concern that a lot of people, one of the biggest criticisms was, if Jason Tatum was playing so well, why not get the ball to him more at the end of the game? I mean, I think that out of the last... What was it, like the 20, last 25 shots or something that were taken, and after his dunk
and his three, he didn't see the ball much after that.
Can you explain why Jason Tatum didn't get more touches near the end of the game?
Well, I mean, when you watch basketball, when a guy gets going and a guy gets hot, and they were doing this even throughout the game, it's not always that easy. I mean, some of it is on Jason, some of it's on you know, the other guards or the decision makers, but I mean, if you look at the shots we got, they're shots we took all year and shots we made all year. And, you know, wide open looks from other players and guys that have scored all season long. So, you know, we're not going to just strictly go to Jason. And when, you know, the defense picks up, you got to be able to go to someone else. I mean, Jason, as good a player as he is and as good a player as he was in Game 7, it's not like we're just going to get the ball to Jason Tatum like he's LeBron James and, you know, think that he's going to be able to go score every time. We did it as a team all year, and we were running the same offense, and we were getting the same shots, and very good quality shots. But I do understand it. I mean, it's like, again, it's second-guessing, and if we make a few of those shots, nobody says anything. But when those shots don't go in...
Maybe it was the people who were shooting them. Maybe it was the people who were shooting them, the percentage of shots that those people make, as opposed to someone like Jason Tatum. I think that was the frustration.
Right, but what I'm saying is that Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown had 27 and 28 points in a brutally difficult environment in Cleveland in Game 6 and carried us, and nobody else could make a shot. And then in Game 7, you know, Jason was our offensive guy, Al Horford early in the game, and Jason Tatum were our hottest offensive players, and typically down the stretch of games, teams pick up and they defend those guys with more force and more focus, and someone else has to step up. And that's just the way the game goes a lot of times. And, I mean, we could – I think that everybody is – it's fair criticism. It's fair to second-guess all those things and have those opinions. But, I mean, the reality – I mean, you could say the same thing with Houston's loss, and we'll be saying the same thing in the NBA Finals loss. Why didn't this guy touch the ball, or why didn't LeBron pass the ball? He's so hot. Why did he pass the ball to J.R. Smith for the – for the open three, or Jeff Green for the open three? Those guys happened to make it. You know, we didn't make it. And that happens. That's basketball.
All right, Danny. Do you have a Twitter burner account?
I didn't even know what a Twitter burner account was until a couple days ago.
Because people are thinking that you're the It's Janos NBA Twitter account, the huge Celtics fan that's a mystery to everyone.
Yeah, like I like that, actually. That would be that's a huge compliment.
You're a smooth operator, is what they're saying.
Out there, there's a Twitter account called @ChipotleLover777.
Well, at is Janos. Is that that's my secret, you know, whiskey drinking account. I can pretend to be a whiskey drinker and eat a lot of soup.
Yeah. They'll immediately know it's not you. You're a shrewd man, Danny Ainge.
And to have an unemployed son. He's who I always wanted to be.
That account is pretty phenomenal, to be quite honest. All right. Well, I mean, what did you think of that whole situation with, you know, you've got a GM who's being accused of tweeting like critical stuff about all the players? I mean, what would you think if you're a player, you're someone in the organization, and that story breaks?
You know what? I'm going to reserve judgment there. I hate how as a society we just jump to these conclusions that people are guilty and until proven guilty. But Brian is I've known him for a lot of years. He was my general manager when I was coaching in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. With the Phoenix Suns, and I got along great with Brian and his father, Jerry. And so I'm just going to stay away from that one right now, and I hope that it's all found to be not true.
Well, do you wish that people would just get off of Twitter? I did.
Well, you needed to because you were taking Ambien.
Well spoken, Danny. Spot on. Danny... I used to think you were screwing around, but I have a feeling
you've listened to this.
But I didn't say anything racist. I didn't go Roseanne.
That's true. No, you did not.
Good for you.
You did not go Roseanne, and I don't know if you should be awarded for that.
Now, Danny, was it titillating at all when you saw me in my shirt and my underwear?
I have to imagine.
All right.
Well, listen, if Jano starts leaking information about Gordon Hayward's ankle, we know where it came from there, Danny Ainge.
All right. Well, everyone, keep your eyes on Josh Okogie from Georgia Tech. That's who they're taking in the 27th.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I've heard.
Fair enough.
All right. Danny Ainge, thank you so much for everything all season, and hopefully we can talk to you sooner than later.
All right, guys.
Don't try to not take any sleeping pills. Thank you.
All right. See
you. Right, see you, man. First of all,
big respect for Danny Ainge.
He's great.
Seriously.
And by the way, I apologize for the phone going in and out, but at some point, it's just you gotta move on. You continue with the interview. But my God, that dude just – have you seen the It's Janos NBA account?
Yes.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Barstool's convinced that it's him.
Well, I mean, it's not him.
That it's him.
It's not him, but it's funny that, like, when he's being accused of it, he's letting that mystery just go.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Like, yesterday he just tweeted out an emoji going, shh.
Yeah, why? Yeah,
don't tell anyone.
Why'd you spell it? Yeah. I wonder how much he listens to the show or how much he's briefed on it.
Who do you think briefed him on you with your Ambien video? I don't think that's something you get forwarded.
Honestly. I wonder if that, like, went around the locker room.
Well, he fucked. This is the guy giving his opinions on your careers.
Right. Sure.
This is the ambient Fred going around.
Oh, boy. All right, Danny Ainge is brought to you by GE. GE is creating game-changing solutions and advanced analytics for performance on the parquet. GE, the exclusive data and analytics partner of the Boston Celtics. I do want to talk a little bit about this article in the Wall Street Journal concerning the fall of ESPN, which I believe is completely... off base. Now they are screwed, and if I was the president of ESPN, I would not have made these decisions. And I'm an idiot. It's amazing how many times
I know that these corporations are screwing themselves, yet they continue to do so. Here's the CBS Sports Minute with Boomer, brought to you by Northeast Electrical Distributors.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for psychobabble horse crap.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Do me a favor. Can someone bring up the daily lineup Monday through Friday of ESPN?
Yeah, I'll pull it
TV
up.
TV or radio?
Well, TV.
TV?
TV.
Okay.
By the way, the coach of Real Madrid just stepped down.
Zinedine Zidane, I believe it was.
Which is interesting.
Zidane or Zidane?
I happened to be at a restaurant while Liverpool and Real Madrid were playing, and it was chaos. It was the middle of the afternoon, and it was chaos. Like 100 people.
Where were you? Where were you?
I was in Newport.
In Newport, okay. Or you could just go to the bar right down the street here.
No, I drove to Newport just to see the game.
No, what I'm saying
I
is
was
that
super interested.
If there is a decent soccer game, you can drive right here in Brighton and hear people screaming outside of the window.
You can drive to Newton.
But
see
the
people
team is out. Immensely successful.
Right. Yeah. But I just thought, my wife was just like, what's going on? Why do people give a crap about this? And then I realized that Liverpool was owned by John Henry, so I immediately wanted them to lose. That was my big excitement. All right, the Wall Street Journal has got an article out that's talking about how politicized ESPN got, and that has ruined them financially, and this is why they're losing all this money. Well, first of all, that's false, because they overpaid an extreme amount for the NBA, they overpaid for the NFL, they've overpaid for all these things.
Well, the NFL's the killer, because they spent a ridiculous amount of money on Monday Night Football, which we all know is an inferior product. Like, there's no right. must-see games that are on Monday night. Those games are all reserved for Sunday evening. So most of the time, you get just, like, crud. Once a season, your team is playing on Monday night, and you're going to watch that. But after that, there aren't really any epic matchups, for the most part, on Monday night.
Well, they're losing money on the properties, on the sports properties that they own. They are. And then there's this idea that the political leanings of people like Jemele Hill turned people off and they didn't want to watch it anymore, to which I would say that show was boring. And Jemele Hill, she says things that are political, and she says Donald Trump is a white supremacist and things like that. But ultimately, she's exceptionally boring. And so I don't understand why ESPN can't sit down and go, all right, what is the problem here? You know what it is? It's because none of them will admit when they make a mistake. They gave her and what's the other, Michael Smith?
Yep.
They gave her and Michael Smith, what, 6 o'clock?
Yeah. Yes.
Leading into SportsCenter?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I don't understand what the idea was, or we're going to have alternate voices, and maybe, you know, people want this. You put two exceptionally boring people on in a primetime spot, because every time there was a ruckus about something Jemele Hill tweeted out, I would say, well, I mean, what about Fran from across the street? Like, I care more about what my neighbor would tweet out than I do what Jemele Hill tweets out. Like, who's watching that? I would contend, and I think the ratings back me up, that no one watches it. And I believe, and if you believe it's the political stuff, which I'm sure doesn't help, look at that disaster of a morning show that they put together, and they've spent $15 million on a new studio for. They gave Greenberg all that money. The idea that Greenberg, the most mashed potato sandwich with vanilla and mayo that's ever existed on the face of the earth, that show is tanking, shows you that I don't think the political thing has everything to do with it. They're making their talent choices are outstandingly dumb. They said Mike Greenberg, instead of just sitting there with that dumb radio show, Mike and Mike, and just counting the money, they said, you know what, Greenberg transcends this. Greenberg is a voice that people want to hear. You know, we could put on a repeat of the West Coast Sports Center that will cost us literally zero, and then we could put on that dumb morning show on, you know, ESPN, whatever the hell they put it on, and have. But the idea that they said, this is going to revolutionize this. Jalen Rose, who I like, but has no experience doing what they're doing. And the woman that
Michelle
they keep around. So
she's all right. I got no problem with her.
Fine.
Yeah.
She's okay.
Yeah.
You have no problem with her.
And that's not what you want in somebody that you tune in the morning.
Yeah,
you
that,
want somebody who
speaks so highly of her.
Right.
Like a lot of people.
Like, I don't like Mike Greenberg. Like, that's the other thing. Like, Mike Greenberg, I'm like, he's infuriated.
Because he's a hack. And so it's so hacky.
Yeah.
The ESPN has made just a tremendous amount of. And then they overpaid for guys that, like, Max Kellerman. Like, who cares about Max Kellerman? Why is he the guy that you picked?
For his rapping skills.
Well, yeah.
Well, you know, he's very fresh.
And he did boxing from his basement. I mean, he's no superstar. What are you doing? And then they
put Ray Lewis in there.
Now you're talking.
Seriously. No, honest to God, that's a great choice.
No, if I was running.
No, it's true.
Well, no. When they put him on that one show, because I think it was FS1 or Fox Sports,
Undisputed,
whatever. They were like, every once in a while, they're like, come on in, Ray Lewis. See, and you know what I do? What did Ray Lewis say?
No, I would.
It's nonsense.
I would have him bopping around every show. I wouldn't give him his own show because that gets old. I'd have him popping into every show. I wouldn't even tell him. I'd be like, just be on campus.
Just keep
be
in a box.
Yeah.
Just open up the box.
Like,
you're loose.
Can you be here from 9 to 5 today? And then just go grab him. Go, Ray, 5 minutes. You got to come in here. What's the topic? Don't you worry about it. You'll get that. Fred, go ahead.
Hey there.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Murdoch, the connection with him and the Wall Street Journal is known, and that I think that's part of it. Fox News is the bird in the background chiming in.
Okay, I was going to ask,
being mauled by a tiger?
Like, what kind of bird is that? That is a loud bird.
It is. I'm going to the next room, and it's still loud. Macaw. The other thing is, you mentioned politics, and any time it's talked about black players taking a knee or white players taking a knee from the national anthem, it's not mentioned why, which is being shot by cops in America, an injustice in America.
Well, I think it is being mentioned by some people. As a matter of fact, the Michelle Beadle thing, in fairness, that went viral is that, she obviously brought that up.
But that's an issue that cannot be ignored.
Right.
I mean, that's a sports issue as much as it is a political issue. I mean, the President of the United States is involved in this, and you have the league making rules. I mean, that's something that needs to be discussed. I mean, that's a political issue, but it's unfair to say that, like, if the issue is that everyone's taking the same side, that's fine. But then you have Chris Broussard on the network that believes there was never any dinosaurs and a bunch of other crap that he's got going on in that head.
He's the Carl Everett of television.
Yeah. I mean, he's saying all kinds of crazy stuff. And then people will say, well, what about Curt Schilling? And then I'll say, huh? Curt Schilling is a phenomenally dumb person that I would have gotten away from a mic 20 years ago. But he called good baseball games. Okay, good. I'll find someone else. They'll do just fine. I don't need him in there.
No.
By the way, Curt Schilling, lots to say about the Roseanne tweets.
You don't say.
Yeah,
you don't say.
You don't think about it. By the way, Roseanne has spoken to having multiple personality disorder. I mean, she's spoken openly about being exceptionally mentally ill.
Yeah.
So I don't know why this is overly shocking to anyone. I mean, she did. She came out and said that she, due to traumatic stuff that happened in her childhood, that she had multiple personality disorder, which is a fairly big thing. So, I mean, they're like, hey, this lady's saying crazy stuff. Well, she's written books about how she has severe mental problems. But I don't know. The ESPN stuff and the political stuff, I think, is just a excuse. And if they felt that Jemele Hill was too political, that was too boring a show.
Well, there is something that involves politics, but it's not political, and it's something that we have to quickly discuss. And that is when Kim Kardashian goes to the White House, the headlines in the New York papers are the greatest. Like, are up there with the best.
Do you know that Kanye and the Kardashians are on the Family Feud?
Yeah. That's going to be a must-see episode.
Like, what planet is Kanye West doing the Family Feud?
In a one where he's just saying and doing things that you're like, what the hell is going on in your mind? Maybe it's all planned for us to say. He wants us to go, wow, this guy's crazy.
Yeah, but he's got a lot of outlets to do that. What are they doing on the Kardashians? Fine. What is Kanye West doing on the Family effing Feud with Steve Harvey?
Creating must-see television.
Saw it, and I'm like, what is going on?
That hasn't aired yet, has it?
No. Okay. No, they're promoting the hell out of it.
Okay, all right. Well, we get back some of the best headlines in the history of New York papers.
This is bold
and that it is a. I would say it's a top 10.
Okay.
A top 10.
All right. Well, it's certainly not number one.
No, no. We know what number one is.
All right. Here are the headlines.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich. 98.5 Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Danny and Pop, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. What's going on, Rich?
Okay, I hope you didn't look this up during the break, but yesterday, Donald Trump tweeted a photo in the Oval Office of him with the biggest smile on his face that you've ever seen. And standing to his right is Kim Kardashian wearing all black. And it says, great meeting with Kim Kardashian today. Talked about prison reform and sentencing. Which immediately... Just if you took me out of like 10 years ago, or we would know who she was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and plopped me into yesterday, and I saw that tweet, I'd say I'm not quite sure what happened or what planet we're on anymore, but that was a phenomenal tweet. And both the New York Post and the New York Daily News took that photo and ran with it. They both have it on the front cover of their newspaper. Let's start off with the Daily News, who had a very funny headline. Theirs was, "The only Kim he could get." Give him the Nobel Peace Prize now. Trump holds historic summit with Kardashian, mocking the fact that he's been talking about doing something with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
But then you go to the New York Post, and their headline is simply, Trump meets Rump. Kim Thong-un pitches prez on prison reform. And then at the top it says, the other big-ass summit. and I believe when you click on the article, it was like the commander in chief with the commander of cheeks.
And they somewhere along, eyebrows are going crazy.
Like, yeah.
Hey now, that.
But that smile on his face is the greatest.
No, he's like, hey. I'm breaking ground. I'll tell you this: it's no Osama bin Wanking.
It is not. Well, Osama bin Wanking might be one of the best. I mean, that's one of the best. And we've seen. There's been some other ones too, but I mean, Trump meets Rump. Kim Thong-un pitches prez on prison reform and the other big-ass summit. That's pretty phenomenal. So congratulations to the New York Post.
The New York Post usually comes out ahead in that battle. The New York Post has the most... They're willing to go the furthest with all of that.
Yeah, that they definitely are.
I can't stop reading about Trump's diet. First of all, they say...
So didn't he change it up? Like, yeah, what's he doing now?
All right, they're giving him hamburgers but with only one bun. And then they say he's 6'3", 236.
236?
6'3", 236.
That's
236.
That's not right.
Okay.
And that he likes scrod. And that he'll get scrod with lemon butter. And I don't know why I read these things. But I'm fascinated by it.
Oh, yeah. So he's swapping steak for Dover sole.
Yeah, Dover sole. That's right.
Yeah, the buns from his hamburgers are being removed, at least the top halves. I wonder if he still tries to eat it with his hands.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so he just folds it like a taco, you think, at that point?
But then they found at Mar-a-Lago that he was indeed eating well-done steak with ketchup.
Okay, he does love the ketchup on his steak.
Just anything about what Trump eats... It's just fascinating to me. I have no idea why, because he has so much money and he has such a sweet diet.
So the cast of Roseanne obviously called out, many of them called out Roseanne Barr after her tweets that got her fired from the show show canceled, rather.
What kind of idiot would tweet on Ambien?
Yeah, not many people.
Even though Danny Ainge called me out on it.
Listen, when you do that, I do wonder if that was something that was kind of passed around the office. You raise a good point.
Yeah, I wonder if I made such an ass of myself that even, like, local teams were like, look at this jackass.
Okay, think of it this way, Fred. Let's say you're not you, and you're just somebody who is, you know, just a person who's not on the radio.
9 to 5 and nickel and dime.
Right, and you knew that somebody who is a personality on television, local television or radio, went on Twitter and took Ambien and tweeted a video of themselves with their shirt off and started, like, videotaping a close-up of his nipple. You would watch that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You would not pass that up.
Oh, sure.
So I got to think that Danny Ainge is human. And I would think that the people in the office probably are as well, and that may have gotten passed around.
Good. Really makes me look great.
Mm-hmm.
That's so, one of the ones you can get away with once.
Yes.
There's a couple things in my career you can only do once.
Well, there is now a report that...
Look at how less gray my beard was, too.
Well, beard isn't as full as it is now.
No, but it wasn't nearly as gray.
That picture is the best. The Abby and Fred photo.
I was tired.
They are saying that the non-Roseanne Barr actors on the show Roseanne, including John Goodman, Laurie Metcalf, Sarah Gilbert, they might actually make a show around that cast.
Wow.
Roseanne Barr.
So Laurie Metcalf, who's a fantastic actress, John Goodman, who's more famous than Roseanne, they'll somehow put it together and do a show without her?
Yeah.
That's shocking.
Yeah, they might be able to continue. I wonder if they're just going to kill her off on the show.
I don't even think you have to do anything. I think you just start it over.
Just don't even mention it.
No.
And still, just call it, what do you call it?
John Goodman's like a single dad type of thing?
Yeah. Just call it like...
she ain't here no more.
Yeah, like it's not hard to believe that that fatso died.
That's the name of the show.
Yeah, like...
That'll even be a line in the pilot.
It's not hard to believe it. The fat's so tired. Yeah. Where's the fat? So, oh, she died.
So many people in this house, but mom's quiet as a mouse. She's 6 feet under.
The fat's dead.
Things so far have been so-so, because since we've lost that fatso,
the fatso's dead.
Of course they could pull the show off without her. Are you crazy? Not when it originally aired, but John Goodman is way bigger star than she is.
What do you mean not when it originally aired? Like
the whole concept was... Roseanne Barr's, and I mean, the whole thing was based on her comedy. I mean, it was groundbreaking at the time. Right.
There was a kind of a funny theory that was out there was that, you know, Wanda Sykes is one of the producers of the show, and
she was obviously pissed.
Is they said, how great would it be if John Goodman married Wanda Sykes?
Not good.
Oh, come on. You don't think that would, like, enrage some of the fan base of that show?
Oh, sure it would.
I don't like being any
pitchforks. I don't like how they mix things up on the show.
Well, then find another African-American woman, except for Wanda Sykes.
Yeah, Wanda Sykes, I'm with you. I don't think she's that funny, but no. I liked the thinking.
But, okay, so if you look at that cast, Laurie Metcalf is truly a brilliant actress. She really is. She's an extremely underrated actress. John Goodman is a good actor and exceptionally famous. Even that Sarah Gilbert woman who I could care less for.
She got a big career on The View.
She has a big career on The View. And even the second Darlene has been in stuff. Of course they could do
Scrubs, right? Was she in Scrubs? The second
I believe
Darlene?
So, and she was also on How You Met Your Mother, which unfortunately I believe I've seen every episode of.
Oh, really?
And you hate that show.
Yep.
And you've watched every single one.
Ted Mosby might be the worst sitcom character ever.
All righty. Slow everything down.
Last decade. How about that? Can we go last decade?
Okay, because you're taking Schwimmer off the table.
Yes, last decade.
Because Schwimmer was a worse character.
Oh, I disagree. I hated Ted Mosby far worse.
And as much as I hate the storylines with Jim and Pam, they were involved in some kind of funny stuff that didn't involve them.
Jim and Pam were... because I've been watching a lot of Office because they've been playing it almost
those
constantly.
First several seasons are so good.
Jim and Pam were awful. At the end, the last five seasons, they were all, as soon as they got together, it was awful.
It was tough. It's like anytime.
Jim sucks. Always looking at the camera with that look, and I understand it's not the guy Krasinski's fault.
Sure.
But I mean, and he was so above everything. Like, the one where they go out to the hibachi restaurant, and like, they're all like drinking and having fun. And, like, talking to the girls, and Jim's, like, looking at the camera like, dude, loosen up, jackass.
Yeah, I don't remember it being that bad in the first couple seasons.
It's not in the first... Well, no, but he's, like, supposed to be, like, the normal guy.
Yeah.
And they'll, like, be doing, like, something funny in the break room, and Jim's, like, eating a salad, which makes me want to destroy him, and B, like, he has no time for the shenanigans.
No, he's got some sandwich that he made from home. Like, what dude makes a sandwich at home, wraps it up, and takes it into prom? Jim's a tool.
Quickly, best character in The Office, quick.
Creed and Michael and Dwight. Creed, Michael, Dwight.
Every scene with Creed's great.
And when you didn't have Michael, and thing went downhill.
Well, I mean, Michael's the best character.
He's great. I watched six episodes last night.
Creed is the one that every time he's on, he has one line per episode, and it's always a home run.
Yeah, I mean, but it's unfair to say Creed is the best character on The Office.
It's just a delivery, man. It's just quick, and it's...
No, because they gave it's like Ralph Wiggum's the best character on The Simpsons.
He's on fire.
He has one line,
Creed reminds me of Mingles
character.
Here. Like, everybody, see, I think you relate to everybody. You know, like,
we have to break because
Wallach is like Toby.
Yeah,
like, get out. Leave now. What are we breaking for?
Because we got commercials that we got to get in before 10.
Yes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone, have a good day. Bye.
Sports.